Who's the best show here?
Head show! Head show! Head show!
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mind.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Yeah. Sorry for a little bit of delay there. Welcome to the show, episode 165, and continuing our string of wonderful guests, we have the pragmatic Richard Stallman on tonight. How you doing tonight, Richard?
I'm very sleepy. I count on you to keep me awake.
Excellent. And we are going to keep you awake because we're going to roll right into some great stuff. GPL version 3 is in the release drafts, right?
Well, we're still trying to finish up the third draft.
Right.
There's still some loose ends, and we're looking at the public's comments.
Yeah. So what's on board for GPL version 3? What's the big key issue?
There isn't one. The basic idea of the GPL is still the same and will always be the same. What we are changing are various details. So there's no one issue that these details all are about. They're about many different issues, each of which we've got to do the right thing about. But the overall idea is to keep the GPL doing the same thing, more or less, but adjusting for the changes in context, for problems we've discovered, and making it more uniform internationally.
Because that's a tough thing to do, because every country has different laws.
Right, but it happens that copyright law is almost the same in all countries because of various treaties which are more harmful than beneficial. But nonetheless, we can make use of them here. What we have to do is avoid using certain words whose meaning does vary, such as distribution. So in GPL version 3, we're not going to talk about distribution at all. Instead, we've defined other words. What we do is we look at the collection of all the activities that copyright law covers, and then we divide them into basically three subcategories, and then we make rules for those three subcategories. So there's modification, there is propagation, which is everything else, and we divide that into conveying and not conveying. Conveying is more or less like distribution, except the way we've defined it, it doesn't depend on the word distribution. So variations in various countries' definitions of distribution don't affect us anymore.
But does, at the heart of it, it still remains the essential four principles, correct?
The essential four freedoms are the goal.
Right, four freedoms.
But GPL is one of many ways of giving people the four freedoms. Every free software license is a free software license because it gives users the four freedoms. But there's more than one way to do that. For instance, there's the choice of copyleft or non-copyleft. To insist that when people pass along their versions, they always have to come with the same freedoms and more or less the same license, that's copyleft. So the GPL is a copyleft license, but there are also free software licenses which don't try to be copyleft. And then whichever of those two choices you make, there's still many other choices to be made.
Okay. When you're talking about the difference of distribution and conveyance and everything, that essentially you are talking about the method by which one party gets access to the source code or the application. Is that what you mean by distribution?
Well, it's there are various ways of talking about giving someone else a copy, more or less. And the question is how to define that category in a way that will have the same meaning in all countries. The word distribution does not have the same meaning, it turns out. So we found a way of defining it. Basically, it's to propagate a copy in such a way that others can get copies. That's conveying. That's our definition of conveying. And it ends up meaning what you'd expect distribution to mean, but it means the same thing everywhere.
Okay. So there's not a lot of controversy behind, I guess, so to speak, the changing of the GPL or the rewording of the GPL in that manner. I mean, everybody's
exactly
on board with
that. Exactly, that's true. I expect so.
Right.
Of all the many things we're changing, there are a few that cause controversy, and there are many others that don't really. Or there are some things that cause controversy for a few companies and everyone else is happy with them. Because each issue affects different parties in various ways, and so they will take sides on it. And they don't always line up. The same parties don't take the same side on all issues.
And I guess one of those big issues is the whole concept of DRM and how the GPL...
Well, yes and no, because GPL version 3 doesn't say anything, won't say anything about DRM directly. You see, DRM, Digital Restrictions Management, just means the intentional design of a program to limit what its user can do. And since free software means you can change a program to do whatever you like, that includes being more limited. And then you can redistribute that to other people. There's no dispute about this. So, of course, GPL version 3 will let you modify a program to be more limited in what it can do and then distribute that to other people. The question is, will those other people be free in practical terms to extend the program again if they wish? And here's where it becomes tricky. You see, DRM developers want the program to restrict the user. They want to modify the program to make it more limited and then distribute that to you so that you will be restricted in what you can do. And, of course, they'll be allowed to do that, but they're often not satisfied with that because if you could then fairly easily extend the program again to make it do what they wanted to stop you from doing, that will not achieve their goal, which is to shackle you. So they look for ways they can effectively deny you the freedom to extend the program again. In the past, when we developed GPL versions 1 and 2, we knew of two methods they might use. One method is through restrictive license terms, and the other method is by not letting you have the source code. Well, in GPL versions 1 and 2, we blocked the methods that we knew about. We said they can't add any such license terms, and they have to give you the source code. If we had known about TiVoization then, we would have blocked it then. But nobody, as far as I know, had ever tried it. At least I'd never heard of it. But now they have the other method of TiVoization, which is to design a machine for the program to run in and design the machine so that if you extend the program and put back the features they didn't want you to have, then the program won't run anymore. So this is what we are trying to block now. We're trying to block this third method of stopping you from changing the program, just as we've always blocked the other two methods.
And that seems to...
And that's where the controversy is. There are people who seem to believe that TiVoization is not only legitimate and acceptable, but that it's wrong to try to stop it.
And then we end up.
But I can't understand how they're thinking.
Oh, okay. And then we end up with. And if you read the LXer editorial this afternoon, or this morning, actually,
that
discussed some of this, it said then you end up with almost essentially back to where you were when you first started the free software movement, or you started the free software concept with closed drivers from for printers. You end up with a closed system like a TiVo.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point. The purpose of copyleft is to make sure that everyone who gets the code also gets the freedom, specifically gets the four freedoms, and in particular here it's freedom number one, the freedom to study the source code and change it so the program does what you want when you run it. So that's the freedom that TiVoization takes away in practice. It's sort of cunning, because TiVoization, in a theoretical sense, respects your freedom. They don't say you're not allowed to change the software. That, you know, when you get the source code of the GPL-covered programs that are in the TiVo, they respect, theoretically, your freedom to change that source code. And the only thing is, if you install the change program in your TiVo, it won't run. So you're free theoretically, but not free in practice. What we're trying to do is make sure that they respect your freedom in practice, not just give it lip service. So what we're going to require is that they provide you with the necessary means to authorize your version of the program to run in your TiVo. Now, they don't have to give you something that would enable you to run it in somebody else's TiVo. Those could be different, maybe. But they have to give you what it takes to run it in your TiVo.
And do you know if TiVo, the company, has... how do they receive that, with the GPL3? I mean, are they on board with that then, or are they...
I don't know. They're not. They have never been... Well, at least Philips. I don't know whether how Philips is structured internally. I just know that the TiVo comes from Philips. Philips has never been very friendly towards this process. But what else would you expect? If we're trying to block something that they're doing, you wouldn't expect them to like it. But we're not doing this to make them happy.
Right.
It sounds like you're doing this to make to protect the end user, really.
Exactly, to protect everyone, because if party A can deny party B the freedom, then not everybody has freedom.
So given that, you know, when the GPL version 3 becomes a finalized draft, and if you do retain the no DRM clause in there, or you can't have TiVoization.
No, it's not. There is no... You've got a misunderstanding. There isn't any no DRM clause.
It's... You can't have...
When you modify a GPL-covered program, you can change the functionality any way you like. So you could install DRM, which simply means taking out certain facilities, certain functionalities. You can do that. What we are going to stop is any method of forbidding others from adding those missing functionalities back in.
Okay. So it's going to forbid them from taking away your ability to still use the product or application once you modified it and removed their restrictions, if they so put it in there.
Exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
Now,
they're free to change the software, and so are you.
And I take it right now the GPL version 2 does allow for that TiVoization to occur.
Correct. There's nothing in GPL version 2 that addresses this case of machines designed to refuse to run a modified version. Because in 1991, when GPL version 2 was finished, we didn't think of this possibility.
Okay. Now, what happens then when GPL version 3 gets finalized and it has those those clauses in there that GPL version 2 allows for, and you have an instance like TiVo that uses the Linux kernel and some free software in there?
Well,
and how is that?
The software they're using is under GPL version 2. We can't retroactively change that. So they won't immediately have to stop. But what we hope is that over time, the versions of software that are under GPL version 3, newer versions, will become the ones that you really want to use, and that eventually the old versions will not be appealing anymore. That's the best we can do.
Yes, and one of the other concerns I've had then, in situation like that, what if people or developers don't want to move to the GPL version 3? Like, what if the Linux kernel stays at GPL version 2, and then other software that is GPL version 3 gets distributed? Are they compatible then?
First of all, the question doesn't even make sense. It's based on confusion. First of all, please note that Linux is the kernel. There's no other thing that's Linux except for the kernel.
Yes, okay, I'm sorry.
The whole system is GNU with Linux added. It was made by taking the GNU system, which was almost complete except for the kernel, and adding Linux, which was a kernel. Anyway, if any particular program in the system, such as perhaps Linux, doesn't advance to GPL version 3, then, and suppose it stays with GPL version 2, the effect of that is that that program could be TiVoized. And that is dangerous for the users, because their freedom might be taken away. That's the only problem that results if some program doesn't advance to GPL version 3. The problem is that it can be TiVoized. The question of compatibility is a meaningless question when you're talking about two different programs. Compatibility of licenses is only relevant for combining code in one program.
Okay.
Keep in mind that in today's versions of the GNU/Linux system, there are many programs with many different licenses. There are many programs with incompatible licenses, but since they're different programs, the fact that those licenses are incompatible doesn't matter. It would matter if you wanted to merge code from one into another. For instance, you can't merge code between TeX, the text formatter, and most other programs in the system. The TeX license is incompatible with every license, including itself.
Okay.
But that's not a problem as long as TeX has a separate program in the system.
Well, okay, I understand then. That clears it up for me. So there simply won't be a problem unless you're mixing code for GPL version 2 and GPL version 3 applications, the software to run side by side.
Yes.
Okay. That clears it up for me and some of our listeners. Thank you. Now, changing gears from the GPL version 3, recently, Eric S. Raymond had come out and recommending that the GNU Linux community start embracing the ability for people to legally get non-free software, particularly speaking about audio and video codecs, making that available to them through companies, particularly Linspire, to be able to install on GNU Linux systems, and with the idea that to appeal to a larger audience will increase the desktop market share of GNU Linux and thus make it easier for us to have some influence in the big business community, and with the long-term goal of hopefully swaying those businesses to then maybe start to adopt open or free software, codecs, and those other things. How do you feel about that approach?
I don't see how it could possibly succeed, because the reason that non-free codecs are used is for the sake of DRM. I don't think that they're going to switch to free codecs so easily, you know, not just because they are using some free software. Someday we, you know, I think that if we ever succeed in getting rid of the use of non-free codecs, it will require stronger action than that. It will require a lot of pressure from people who are organized and demand freedom. So I disagree with everything he says. I mean, the last part of his argument is totally implausible to me. It might conceivably increase the use of GNU/Linux in big businesses. I just don't think that's terribly important. You see, I'm not doing this to make a system that is popular. I'm doing this to win freedom. The reason I started developing GNU, the reason I started the free software movement, was so that I and you can live in freedom, not because I'm wanting to gain support from big business. I won't install any of those non-free programs on my computer. I just won't access the material that's in those codecs, in those formats.
Okay. Then as the community, though, I mean, ideally, I can understand where there's, you know, you and the Free Software Foundation want to see more support for free software in use all over, and there's some members of the community that aren't so, you know, are more or less, hey, whatever I want to do should be up to me, and if I want to participate in that. I mean, how do we
balance that?
Well, that's
right. There are people
who
value freedom, and there are people who don't value freedom, who don't appreciate it as important. You know, there are people who give up all sorts of freedoms for some kind of convenience, and there are others who will fight to preserve their freedom. And that we have freedom of any kind, to the extent we do, is because of the people who were determined to fight for it. That we are losing so much freedom, so many important human rights have been taken away in the United States recently, and this is partly because we don't see the citizens up in arms.
Well,
people
the vast
don't
majority
appreciate
people,
freedom enough in the U.S., and so we're losing it.
Most people don't care about, you know, the specifics of freedom, it seems like. You know, we had this big protest.
Well, that wasn't always true, and it's a terrible mistake. It's the worst mistake you can ever make, and that's what Eric Raymond is making. The mistake of treating freedom as secondary.
So it sounds like if the goals are the same, the means about going
no,
about
no,
are
no,
completely
wrong,
different.
Completely backwards. In some ways, his means are similar to ours, but he doesn't share our goals. Eric Raymond has never agreed with our goal. Our goal is to live in freedom, to escape from non-free software. And we do this, we have this goal, because we believe that non-free software is an injustice. It tramples the freedom that the user should have. That's the problem. For us, non-free software is a problem. It's a social and ethical problem, and the aim of our work is to solve that problem, to correct it. Now, Eric Raymond doesn't share that worldview. He doesn't share our goal. It's almost a coincidence that he likes to participate in similar activities that in many cases do help our goal, but that's almost a coincidence because he has different goals.
Right. So then what you're essentially saying is free software, the ability to propagate or use free software is the goal of the Free Software Foundation, whereas what he's advocating isn't so much as supporting the goals of the Free Software Foundation. He is more or less trying to promote the use of GNU Linux in a wider, or actually say, in that case, not so much GNU Linux, in a wider scale, and not retain the principles behind the Free Software Foundation.
Right. I can't speak for him. I can't say what his goals are, but they seem to be more about the popularity of certain software than goals of an ethical nature. His goals don't seem to concern ethics. They seem to concern more popularity of certain software.
So it sounds.
But I can't speak for him.
It's okay. So it sounds like, in essence, here a lot of times people get kind of bent out of shape or at odds with, you know, looking at it and saying, well, you know, the Free Software Foundation says this. Other people in the GNU Linux community say that. And we're actually like looking at two different concepts here, whereas the Free Software Foundation is promoting free software, and that's it. That's the goal.
No. It's not the Free Software Foundation. It's the Free Software Movement.
Free Software Movement.
The Free Software Foundation is one organization in this movement, but there are many others. It's not just this one organization. But, yeah, there are people with totally different goals in this same community. Totally different philosophies. The disagreements are fundamental.
Right. Now,
and it's, in some ways, it's nice that we've been able to work together in practical projects so much. But sometimes the different goals lead to different actions. If you look at what opensource.org says and compare it with what GNU.org says, you'll find totally different ideas, totally different goals. And these different philosophies motivate people to do different things. For instance, suppose someone writes a very powerful, convenient, proprietary program. Or suppose someone writes the only program that can do a certain job, and it's proprietary. Say, suppose it's a codec for a secret format, and it's proprietary, and no one can write a free program because nobody knows the format. So then you show this to an open source person, and if the program is powerful and reliable, the open source person will say, oh, gee, I'm surprised you were able to develop such a powerful, reliable program without using our development model. But I can't deny that you did, so I'll use it. That would be the logical consequence of believing in the philosophy of open source, the one that the open source campaign talks about, present to the public. But now, if you show that same program to... Oh, and if I suppose that if they were presented with the codec for the secret format, they'd probably say, well, since this program does decode the format, I guess I'll use it. But if you show these programs to a free software activist, someone who has come to appreciate the importance of freedom, what he will say is, no, I won't use this program, because if I use this program, I'm giving up my freedom. I don't care what development model you use. That's a side question, since I'm not involved in the development. And I don't care whether it's powerful or reliable, because it doesn't respect my freedom. And then if you look at the secret codec, or basically any program which is being used to restrict the public, then the more reliable that program is, the less of a chance that we can find a way to break through the restrictions it tries to impose on us. So making a program powerful and reliable can be a bad thing if the job of the program is to take away our freedom. Then we want it to be faulty. We want it to fail to take away our freedom effectively. So, in fact, people have proposed, quote, open source DRM, unquote. And what they mean is they hope to use the open source development model to make their DRM program reliable at restricting the users. And then to make sure the users can't change it, they plan to TiVoize it. And so anybody who gets involved in their development process to help make their program more powerful and reliable is just helping them restrict you and me.
So if we open the doors, they're going to be, and allow for this to creep in, it's going to be almost impossible to close them later on down the line, and we're going to be left with a mess that we don't really want to deal with.
Well, I don't know how, I can't say what's going to be happening in the future. What I can say is that this is dangerous, and that our main chance of maintaining our freedom is if we recognize that it's wrong to take away our freedom. The problem with, you see, the open source philosophy can work fine for encouraging people to participate in a free software project, because it doesn't really, you know, when you're helping people write a program, it's not crucial what your philosophy is as long as you're working together with the other developers. But the problem with the philosophy of open source is that it doesn't show people any reason to value and insist on their freedom. So it doesn't teach them to be prepared to resist when someone tries to take away their freedom.
I get it.
I have a question regarding the Linux kernel. The Linux kernel developers have come out and said they want to stay with the GPL version 2. If there's a point in the future where there's a need to have a GPL version 3 kernel, and the Linux kernel guys don't want to go to the version 3 of the GPL...
Well, that's not really meaningful. There's no particular need to have a kernel under GPL version 3. What we need to do is block off the TiVoization of future improved versions of Linux. So, but that can only be done by the developers of Linux. I hope that they'll decide to do it.
Well, if that doesn't happen, will there ever be a point
then,
where you,
if that doesn't
there's a fork
happen,
in the kernel?
I don't understand. I'm sorry, I don't understand. The scenario doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry. If the developers of Linux, the kernel, don't move to GPL version 3, the problem that will result is that Linux, newer versions of Linux, will continue being TiVoized. And that will be a problem for the users of the machines that have these TiVoized versions of Linux. And those could turn out to be nearly all PCs, you know. As PCs implement treacherous computing, then treacherous computing is another form of TiVoization. And the result is you could find that there are TiVoized versions of GNU/Linux systems available for PCs, and that if you want to access certain websites, you can only do it from one of these TiVoized systems, and you won't be able to modify the software that's involved. If you install any modified versions, it would run, but it wouldn't be able to access any of those sites.
Okay, so in addition to worrying about the TiVoized software, and we're also now looking at the, TC, Trusted Computing platform?
Treacherous there. Computing.
Treacherous Computing
they
platform.
They call it Trusted, we call it Treacherous.
Right. So what's your...
They call it Trusted, we call it Treacherous, because these are two different points of view. From the purpose of TCPA is to transfer the control of your computer to various companies. The design of that system is to set it up so that an application developer can trust your computer to obey him and not you. So from his point of view, it's trusted, and from your point of view, it's treacherous. I take the point of view of the users, so I call it treacherous computing. And what it will mean is that effectively, that just as with what the TiVo does, in theoretical terms, you'll have the freedom to change the GPL-covered software, but if you do, it won't really work anymore. Because, various websites will be able to tell that you have changed some software, and that means that they won't talk to you at all.
Okay. Now,
so, again, theoretically, in a nominal sense, you can change the software, but in practical terms, you can't.
Okay.
That's what they're trying to set up.
Now, in kind of like the example you're giving there with treacherous computing, one of the things that you hear, though, is it's possible for now that the hardware, when you purchase your hardware, it won't let you install or the capability of installing a certain operating system on there. How does the GPL...
Yeah, there are machines like that.
How can the GPL in any way combat that? Because now you're not necessarily talking about a software issue. Now you're talking about a hardware issue.
If the machine... Well, first of all, please listen. These are two different questions you've mixed up.
Okay.
The GPL is... First of all, if a machine is designed so that you can't install free software on it, we can't stop that. If they're not using any free software in the machine, then we have no say over it. We can't stop that by changing the GPL. And, in fact, there are such machines. The Xbox is one such computer. It's really a PC, but it's been designed to try to stop people from installing their own software on it. And then in France, there are machines that are sold as PCs, which come with Windows and won't allow the installation of GNU/Linux. This is a serious problem, but since our software is not in those machines, and the developers of those machines don't want to have our software installed, there's really nothing we can do to them by changing our license. We'd have to solve that problem some other way. However, there's nothing impossible about the GPL making conditions that affect what can be done in hardware that's meant to be shipped with our software. What we can do is we can say the hardware's got to be designed so that if modified versions can be installed, then the owner of the machine has to get the ability to do it, has to be given the information that's needed in order to do it. Because if the machine allows installing new software, there's got to be some information that you use to tell the machine to accept the new version. And then if the manufacturer has that information in order to install to make new versions run, well, if you give that information to the user can also use it to make new versions run. We just have to say to the manufacturers, you've got to provide that information.
Okay. Now, recently, about a month, 2 months ago, there was a big issue came to light with regards to Mozilla, Firefox, and Thunderbird in Debian, and a conflict between the trademark and the Mozilla Foundation's insistence that any changes that are made to the applications, the source code, be first approved or sent to the Mozilla Foundation for review before they could be added back into the Debian Linux distribution.
Right, so Debian just had to change the name.
Right.
But I don't see that as a... I don't see the name issue as important. It's just a name. The problem I see is the fact that Mozilla, as shipped, includes non-free software and and downloads more non-free software from Mozilla's site.
And we're
the non-free software that the binary contains may not be obvious because it's not in the sources. The sources of Mozilla are free. However, if you get their binary, you're getting a non-free module called TalkBack, as well as the free software of Mozilla itself. Now, I urged them to start developing a replacement, and recently they told me that they had begun doing so. Well, that's good. At least that's one problem that's on its way to being solved. But there's another problem with Mozilla, and always has been, and that is non-free plugins. And it's not just that you could install a non-free plugin if you wanted to, but their site actually provides them to you. So they're directly, although they don't include these non-free programs as labeled as part of Mozilla, they are providing these non-free programs and using Mozilla to encourage people to install them.
Okay, so you're specifically talking about the extensions and the plugin architecture. Some of those may not be free.
Well, some of those are non-free.
Are non-free.
And that's no good.
Okay, so then that's kind of the same thing, the same issue with audio and closed video, non-free codecs is what you're saying. That, yeah, we can have an application
right.
like MPlayer that can play AUG and Theora formats, but, you know, now we have a problem with it because it can also support non-free codecs.
Exactly. So there's a serious problem with any program that invites the user to install other non-free programs.
And then, okay, so somebody, you know, then I guess people in the community, again, we get back to that issue of saying, well, that's all fine for the Free Software Foundation, but if I want to run Firefox and a free software movement, but if I want to run Firefox or Mozilla and choose to use a non-free extension.
But that's not the question. You've misunderstood the issue. The issue is not whether some person could install a non-free plugin. The question is encouraging the public to do so. Whatever we do, people will be able to install non-free programs in their machines.
Okay.
And that would include non-free plugins from Mozilla. But I'm talking about a separate question, which is whether to urge the public to do that. Right now, Mozilla, as it's distributed, encourages the public to do that precise thing.
When you say encouraged, you mean encouraged by the way that they make, you know, have a resource available out there for you to acquire those?
Exactly.
Or do you mean like if
exactly.
you would go to a place that
they
had
not only. I mean that Mozilla itself looks for plugins on a particular site, and that site has non-free software in it. It sends non-free software to the user. The user doesn't have to go looking for some non-free program to install because Mozilla directly suggests it to him. So it's not just that the possibility of installing a non-free plugin exists. It's not a mere theoretical possibility. It's something directly and specifically encouraged.
Okay, so
people who have no idea about free or non-free and don't know what plugins are still end up installing them because Mozilla says, should I install this plugin? And the user says, yes. And Mozilla installs the non-free plugin, which it got from Mozilla's own site.
Okay, so then again, I guess the question would be the Mozilla Foundation or the Mozilla Yeah, Mozilla Foundation. They would come back, and I would assume that they would say, well, we're looking out for the convenience of our users. They want this. We can give that to them conveniently instead of them having to hunt it down for
exactly.
themselves.
So this shows what their priorities are. Those are open source priorities. Priorities not based on the idea that freedom is essential.
Okay, so I guess in a sense it almost comes down to, in some respects, if their priorities were for free software, they wouldn't recommend non-free software, and then it would be up to the user themselves to, if they really wanted to not participate in the philosophy of the free software movement, to learn how to do it themselves, to get what they want themselves.
Yeah. We can't stop people from installing non-free software on their machines, and we don't try to stop them. But we make it a point not to promote or encourage the use of any non-free program. If you find out about some non-free program and you install it, that's your responsibility. I'd say you're doing something that you shouldn't do. If it's your own machine, you're the main victim. But if it's not my responsibility. But if I were to tell you, over there you'll find a non-free program and it is convenient, then I'm responsible, because once I say that to you, it's quite likely that you would respond by installing that program. So I feel it's my responsibility never to talk about a non-free program in a way that's likely to lead people to want to use it. Then at least I'm not contributing to the problem.
Okay. That makes sense.
And likewise, I think Mozilla's responsibility not to encourage the use of these non-free programs, but they do more than encourage the use. They actually distribute these programs.
All right. I understand. One of the things I was trying to get to with regards to the whole Mozilla and the Debian issue before was trademark. What is the relationship between GPL and open source licenses and trademark?
Well, open source licenses I can't speak to, because some open source licenses are not free software licenses, and I don't want to make statements about open source licenses because I'm not in favor of open source. But in general, a free software license concerns the code in a program, the conditions for using that code. The name of the program is a different question. And if the name is a trademark, they might have requirements based on trademark law saying that under certain circumstances you can't use the name. So you'd have to make another name. Well, that's not a big problem. And please note that the name of the program is a different matter from the command name that you could use to invoke it. So even if you're not allowed to call your program Firefox, I believe you can still install it such that, you know, installing a symlink named Firefox to your program.
Okay.
So that anyone who installed your version and ran a script that expected to use Firefox would get your program instead. So the trademark really has no effect on anything with a functional significance. It only affects labeling.
Okay. So then, in a sense...
And that's why I think it's not a very important issue.
So then, so long as the trademark doesn't restrict any of the four freedoms of the...
Well, it can't restrict.
Right,
that's
you can't.
The point. It's just the way trademark law is, that it can't take away the four freedoms, any of them. And that's, so I think the trademark law, that these trademark issues are side issues.
Okay. So in a sense, they're kind of non-issues. I mean, it's just as simple as renaming the application.
Exactly. Well, not even renaming the executable necessarily, just putting a different name on the package.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, yeah. So this is why I think that the fuss that they get is not merited.
All right. The last time we spoke, we had mentioned two projects that you were very interested in. One was the Ganache, the GNU Flash, and the other one was, I believe, open or the free software version of Java. And it looks like Sun is really on the verge of releasing Java in a more open license. And I mean, what's your opinion of that? Do you think that that's going
to
be a good thing?
That's the right thing to do. Of course. Everybody developing software should make it free software. If you're distributing a copy of a program to someone else, you should do it in a way that respects his freedom. Sun should have made Java free software before, but better late than never. If they make Java free software now, then they'll be doing the right thing now. And I think that it's more important that they do the right thing now than to reprove them for over having done the wrong thing in the past. You know, it's more important to focus on correcting a problem than on complaining about it. So if Sun makes Java free, I'll say that there's nothing wrong anymore.
And if Sun does go and make Java free, I mean, what's that mean for the current project that's in place for a free Java?
Well, it we'd have to see. There'd be no need for the goal of re-implementing Java for the sake of freedom, but some of the code that's been developed may still be useful. And maybe we could start merging things and so on.
Okay. And now, Ganache.
But basically, if Sun's Java implementation becomes free software, it'll be a part of our community. And we will treat it like any other part of our community, based on what it is now, and not holding grudges because of things that were wrong that were done in the past.
Okay. And how is
And meanwhile, the people who have worked on free Java implementations might be disappointed, but their work will not have been for naught. Because if Sun makes Sun's Java platform free, we can be pretty sure that a large part of the reason for this is that people have been working on free Java implementations. So they will be able to take part of the responsibility for the result.
Okay. What about Ganache? How's that coming along? Are you keeping up with that project?
It's making good progress. I believe that it now handles everything except except video inclusions, and now that's being worked on.
Yeah, because I tried it out a few months ago, and it looked like it was really, really coming along well.
Well, try it again. I've actually never tried it myself. I've never, as far as I know, viewed anything in Flash. But I think that we're getting into the home stretch.
Yeah, that's a really important program because, you know, it's been, Adobe with their product has really kind of dropped the ball for the longest time in the community. And, you know, and then again, it's not a free project.
But wait. It's not free software, so it's not in the community.
Right.
And it's no contribution, and it's actually a good thing if they technically do a bad job.
That is
imagine, you know, imagine that you're living in a feudal society and there's a nasty earl that rules your region, but he's been incompetent and lazy and hasn't bothered to oppress people lately. Well, that's not a failure. That's actually a success. That's a good point.
Just out of practice.
Yeah.
So, the more technically good job a proprietary software developer does, the more of a threat that developer is to the community's freedom.
That is true. And the Ganache project is something that we do really, really need in a community.
Yes. Well, I was really glad when John Gilmore offered funding for it and thus enabled it to get going. And now I believe there's other funding as well. I'm not sure exactly where it's coming from. But the result is that several people are working on it. And soon, I hope, most of the Flash sites will be no problem anymore.
Now, do you actually work on any projects yourself? Coding anymore?
A little bit. I work a little bit on GNU Emacs. But I don't have the time to do it very much. I spend so much time giving speeches and doing interviews and answering my email that I haven't got time for programming. Which in some ways is disappointing, but I'm doing the job that's most important to do.
Right.
And I have a song about that.
Hey, Richard, if I can break in just for a second, I just have a couple of quick questions for you that are pressing me. I've been listening to the interview so far. Just a couple of things I'd like to ask you before I leave.
Go ahead.
One of them is, how do you, as a person who wholeheartedly believes in free software and the fundamental freedoms associated with that, and freedoms in general, how do you justify running your free software on proprietary hardware?
I don't know what you mean by proprietary hardware. See, when I say proprietary software, I mean software that isn't free, and I have a definition of free software based on the four freedoms. So I know what proprietary software means. But that criterion doesn't make sense to apply to hardware. So you must be using some other criterion, and I don't know what it is, and
well,
what's your criteria
for free software?
Software that respects the four freedoms for the user. And these are the freedom to run the software as you wish, freedom to study the source code and change it, do what you wish, freedom to make copies and distribute them to others, and freedom to make copies of your modified versions and distribute them.
Okay, and that would be exactly and directly applicable to the hardware as well. All you have to do is replace software with hardware. Freedom to
study it. Except that we don't have copiers for hardware. So the question of freedom to copy, a computer, is totally meaningless.
Why
there are no computer
copiers. There are a lot of electronic technicians who would, be a great advocate.
No technician can copy a chip. In fact, nobody can copy a chip. There are no copiers for chips, and when chips are manufactured, they're not made by copying a master chip.
But you can design a circuit to emulate that.
Ah, but that's different. That's very, very different. You see, the thing that made copying an important ethical and political issue for the public is the existence of copying machines. Machines that mean you can copy. You could copy a file. Now, in the old days, say 200 years ago, It was possible to copy a book. All you had to do was set the type and then use your printing press, and you could make more copies of that book. But that was not an automatic process. That was a very laborious process, and one that most people couldn't do, because even most people who could read and write didn't have printing presses. So it was sort of an unimportant issue whether readers were allowed to copy books. But it became an important issue once we had copiers, and it became feasible to copy a book.
So what you're saying
in the same sense,
if we had no mechanism,
software.
Right? If we had no mechanism to copy software, then the entire free software movement would be moot. Then is what you're saying.
Exactly. But the point of digital technology is it enables you to copy information. So as a result, now for any kind of information work, you can have a copy in your computer, and it is feasible to copy it. And therefore, issues about the freedom to copy become important. They become meaningful to the lives of hundreds of millions of people that have computers. But there are no such copiers for hardware. What you said, you could design a modified machine and build it, that's sort of like you could set the type for the book and print more copies.
Sure.
Except harder.
Sure. Well, you know, understandably the process is a lot harder, but, you know, it is possible to get, I mean, there are some companies that are developing, Sun, for example, is releasing specifications for an open source Spark chip.
Well, I'd rather not use the term open source, but their design, I think, is free. And I think it's good.
An open or free design.
But it's not essential. It's the fact that copying files on a computer is feasible for hundreds of millions of people that makes this freedom so important. It's not just feasible with great difficulty, but it's a straightforward use of your computer.
Okay, but where do
if
we
and when
where
copying
do we draw
hardware
the line?
Gets that easy?
Right, but where do we draw the line as to what's feasible for whom and how feasible it is? Because for most
well,
of the computer
I don't think
users
that's a
that
hard
I've met,
problem.
No, it is, because for most of the problem. Computer users that I've met, they have great difficulty copying like a text document. So we're talking
really?
About there's a lot of different
well,
levels.
I see
there
lots
really
of
are.
People can do it.
Well, I'm sure, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who can.
But you see,
you know,
the point
design...
is, you're trying to confuse two different issues, which is how hard is it, and one is how hard is it, and the other is does the person know how? These are not the same question. So
no,
you're making
I don't
the, wanna... you're making the situation artificially blurry and confusing when it really is very simple.
I didn't want to make the issue or the difference in the issue at all. I wanted to make the issue. How do you justify using free software when you use them?
Right, and I'm saying
hardware?
That I don't think that the issue of that hardware presents a similar issue at all. Free hardware designs are a useful thing, but
certainly.
Hardware as such can never be free until there are hardware copiers.
Do you really need a copier or just a method to make this thing?
You really need
you know?
A copier. If it is easy, basically, why do you want me to repeat myself? I already answered that. Do you really want me to say it again? I will. It doesn't seem very efficient. The existence of some means by which somebody could build another one is not the point. That's not enough to make this a real important issue.
You don't see that as a correlation between, you know...
No, not at all.
And making a
I see the crucial thing is difference. The difference is what matters to me here. The difference between you could build another one somehow and you can type a command and it'll copy it.
Okay, I just wanted to get that straight.
In the age of the printing press, I would not have been campaigning to reduce copyright power because it was too restrictive.
Right.
Because in those days, it really was infeasible for ordinary readers to copy books.
They didn't have pencils or pens back then?
It was infeasible. It was a gigantic amount of work to copy a book that way.
Yet they did it, you know, for hundreds
people occasionally
of years that way, right?
Did it, yes.
Occasionally,
not very much in the last century.
That way.
Yet not very much in the last century, though. But before that, yes, people copied more by hand, and nobody ever tried to stop them with copyright.
Right. Right, there wasn't, it was a better time back then. There wasn't such an evil thing.
Well, it's partly just that copyright was intended to be an industrial regulation on printers.
Until the politicians got a hold of it, and then they made it a regulation on, you know, humanity. Anyway, my second question is that, my second question is this. If, as a programmer, right, how is it that in your mind a programmer is supposed to make money if they're programming free software? Like, what's
well,
the,
who knows?
What's
why
the
assume
avenue
that they're
for,
supposed to make money? Why assume
well,
that they're supposed
need,
to make money?
Because people need to make a living. Like, this is not...
Well,
you
that means
I mean?
They just...
Not
that just
well,
you're confused. You're confused. You're confused. This person may need to make a living.
You.
But what does that have to do with writing free software? You seem to be making the assumption that he has to get paid for writing the free software. What if he has a job and does that and gets paid for that?
What if he wants to write free software? You know, how is he supposed to make a living if he only likes to write free software? Or is that something that you understand is supposed to be done in your spare time?
Maybe he can't. Maybe you have to get some other job. If, you know, if you need to make money and you can't make money, if you find that nobody will pay you to write free software, I guess you've got to get another job, right?
So
this is pretty
ideal,
simple. It's not rocket science.
Well, yeah, and that's what evidently it sounds that way. But I just want to establish that in your idea of a utopian society, people just, you know, give away their code.
I'm not thinking of
rich.
A utopian society, and you've got me wrong. You keep on trying to put words in my mouth and I don't like it, so stop. Do you want me
to
say what I think, or do you want to try to make it hard for me to say what I think by giving your suppositions that are in confusing ways?
I'm not trying to confuse you. I'm trying to get you to answer a confusing question for me in your own way.
Right, well, let me make the situation unconfusing. The reason it's confusing for you is that your question has linked things that should be separate. You've taken a pretty simple situation and sort of taken a question that cross-cuts against it in a way that's confusing. You'll find it much easier to understand if you change the questions you ask. It's wrong to develop non-free software, so people shouldn't do that. So,
okay, so wait.
It's
right there,
good
wait,
to
right
develop
there.
Free software, so by all means do if you can.
I get you.
Listen, you wanted me to answer. Will you please let me answer? You're not doing anything useful by interfering with my explaining
the
question
you
raised.
The
question you
asked
doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
If I'm asking you a question, I would know what it is.
The question you asked has an implicit presupposition, which I disagree with.
I don't mean it to
and
have,
therefore,
I don't mean it to have a presupposition.
The only answer to your question is, I disagree with the presupposition. That's the only answer it can get.
All I want to know is, if you are a programmer, right, if you are your occupation, you get up and you live and breathe to program.
That's not,
how are
no,
you
sorry,
to,
pal, I don't accept that already. I already think that you've made a mistake. You've got a confusion. People aren't born with labels on them saying what it is that they can do for a living.
Perhaps that's your passion.
If you were a comedian and nobody would pay you to do comedy, you'd have to get another job, right? It's that simple. If you can't make a living programming in an ethical way, you'll have to get another job. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just capitalism.
Fine. If it's capitalism, it's capitalism. And why isn't capitalism okay with software as well?
It is. That's what I just said. If you want to program, but But no one will pay you to program, then you'd have to get another job. That's true now. There are people who know how to program, but they're unemployed, or they've had to get other jobs because there's no demand for them. That's life.
So what you're saying is you should not be able to make money by programming.
No, I didn't say that. What I said is that there's no reason why you necessarily must be guaranteed the possibility. You may be able to make money from programming, and I've got nothing against
that
as long as you're programming in an
How would you make money programming for free software?
I didn't say you would. I said it might happen. Please,
you're
oversimplifying what I say and distorting it. I can't possibly say what I think if you just twist everything I say. I'm beginning to think that this is a useless conversation. Do you want to know what I think? Or are you trying just to make it impossible for me to speak? Is anyone
else there?
Yeah.
No, you asked a question and you won't let me respond to it by clearing up the situation.
I can't even finish the question.
You did finish the question the first time.
I understood you,
but it's confused. There are several kinds of programming jobs that people can get. There are a few jobs developing proprietary software, which are unethical, and those shouldn't be done. There are a few jobs developing free software. If you get one of those, that's fine. The majority of these jobs are developing custom software. That's legitimate, too, as long as you respect the rights of your client, and you can. They don't always do so, but they could. So, programming jobs are legitimate, and if you get one, that's fine. However, most of those jobs are doing custom software, not general-purpose free software. So, the result is that a lot of people who want to work on free software just have to do it in their spare time. And they may also be making, if they need to make a living, they'll have a job. And that job could be developing custom software, or it could be in some other field. There's nothing wrong with lots of different jobs that people could get.
Right.
The point is that there's no reason why it must be the case that people developing free software can get paid to do so. It's good when they can, and sometimes they can, but it's not necessary that this always be possible. Lots of people do develop free software in their spare time, and they have jobs of some other kind.
Sure.
So they're not starving.
The only thing I was trying to get at is
the
only thing I was trying to get at is that you believe it to be a decent occupation for someone to develop or to get paid developing custom software.
Yes, I do.
Okay, then how does that justify itself with wanting all software to be free?
Well, custom software can be free. Remember, free software means that the users who have copies have the four freedoms. If you develop a program for a specific client who wants a certain thing, and you provide it to him, respect giving him the four freedoms, and he chooses, so he has the right to distribute it to others, but suppose he never wants to. Well, that's okay. Freedom number two is the freedom to make copies and distribute them to others, but it's not an obligation. It means you can do it if you want to. If you happen not to want to, you don't have to.
Right.
So the result
is, if my employer pays me to develop software, and then doesn't give it away for free, that's fine.
Doesn't publish it at all. But remember, free software doesn't mean give it away for free. That's not what it means. Free software is a matter of freedom, not price.
Okay.
Selling free software is perfectly legitimate, but the reason why it's selling free software is that you respect the user's freedom. So after you sell a person a copy, he gets it with the four freedoms. Mm-hmm. And likewise, to have a free program means you're free to distribute copies. But if you choose not to distribute copies, that's okay too. and or if you feel like distributing a copy to this person today and tomorrow you choose not to distribute a copy to that person, that's okay, because each time you're free to distribute copies, but you're also free not to.
Mm-hmm. So the initially speaking, then, the only difference between proprietary software and free software is whether or not it's released to the public.
No, absolutely not.
Because if it's the, not, if
the
it's,
definition
if it's
of free software is
released,
very precise.
Right, but if it's proprietary
no.
and never released, then it then the rest of the definition doesn't hold because it never gets to a consumer.
If it's never
to be free or not,
if only one right. user has it, and that user has the four freedoms but never chooses to distribute copies, then it is free software because every user has the four freedoms. Free software
right.
does not mean it's been released to the public. Proprietary software is typically released to the public, but in a way that doesn't respect the freedom of the users that get copies. That's the thing that's wrong. To provide people copies of software, but deny them the essential freedom, that's wrong. That's mistreating those people. But to choose not to distribute a program today, that's okay. It may be unfriendly in some cases, but it's not putting a person in a position of being subjugated.
Right.
You know, if your friend asked you for a copy of a program and you said no, he might conclude you're a jerk. But that's... But if you said, yes, I'll give you a copy of the program, but I'm going to restrict you in your use of it, that would be worse than just being a jerk.
That would be unethical.
Exactly.
Anyway. You had mentioned right before Link had come on and asked his question that you had some kind of song.
That's about how much time I have to spend answering my email.
Oh, okay. The song's about that?
Yes.
And where can people hear this song?
Well, I could sing it for you now if you want.
Go right ahead.
Cool. Go for it.
I've been answering my email all the goddamn day. I've been answering my email, 'cause my work gets done that way. Can't you feel the fingers aching? Type until early in the morn. Can't you see the letters blurring? It's just an ad for porn.
Oh, that was great.
Hey, good job, man.
Oh, yeah, that was fabulous.
You know what? Let me ask you another question there, because your song reminded me of something here. You do an awful lot of, you've done an awful lot of coding. You've done an awful lot, you answer a lot of emails, obviously, according to your song there. How concerned are you about repetitive stress injury? Because, you know, that's a topic that's come up on this show.
Well, I've had it. I had it back when they called it RMS, which was sort of annoying. If they were going to name a disease it with my name, that shouldn't mean I have to get it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But I discovered that different keyboards hurt less. Basically, the feel of the keys is what matters to me for the problem that I had.
Now,
and that's why I began traveling so much in 1997, because I didn't need to have people typing for me anymore.
Okay. So then, it has that, since you've had the RMS, has that limited how much work you could actually do on your systems, or have you
well,
you know, completely
recovered?
Well, it did back
then. It did back then because I didn't have typists working for me all the time, full time. So sometimes I just had to type slowly or read or do other things. But nowadays I can usually type as much as I want.
All right, so
with the keyboards with very light touch.
Okay. So with something that
you... This is one of the things that people like the Happy Hacking keyboard for. It has a very light touch, and so it doesn't hurt.
Okay, so essentially you recovered from that by not only getting a new keyboard or a better keyboard, but also you took a break from doing an excessive amount of typing.
No, it wasn't a break. It was the keyboard.
Well, it was just the keyboard. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, back when I had the problem, the amount I could type was limited. But it was because that keyboard was hurting me.
Okay. And you're using the Happy Hacking keyboard now, right?
Well, not these days, because I'm using a laptop which has a keyboard that feels good enough in its own, in itself. But the Happy Hacking keyboard will plug into anything, so that's a sort of general-purpose solution if you need it.
Okay. Now, what laptop are
you... I have a question for you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pat.
Go ahead, Dan. You can continue with the laptop.
No, I was just curious. What kind of laptop are you using over there?
Oh, it's an old ThinkPad.
Oh, okay. And go ahead, Pat, your question.
Yeah, I have a quick question, changing gears back to technology stuff. KDE originally was, uses the Qt toolkit. Originally, it wasn't released under the GPL, but they've released it on the GPL for a number of years now. But a lot of times you hear people saying that it's not really free software. What's your view on this?
I don't know why they think that. Of course it's free software. It's released under a free software license, so it's free software.
That's exactly what I thought, too. Thank you.
But in the past, it wasn't free software. In the past... it was released under a license that didn't give the four freedoms. That's why it was not free software. That's why there was a problem. If somebody tells you today he thinks that Qt is not free software, maybe he's just repeating news that's been circulating for many years and was originally true but isn't true anymore. That's just a guess. I don't know. I'd have to check, what such a person is actually saying before I could really be sure.
Now, on your systems, on your ThinkPad, are you running GNU Linux?
Yes. I'd prefer to call it GNU/Linux or GNU+Linux, because it's the combination of the two. It's not that it's, it's not GNU's version of Linux.
Right.
It's GNU with Linux added.
Okay.
But yes, that's what I'm running.
Now, are you strictly, Emacs command line, or do you use a graphical interface with that?
I use a graphical interface when I absolutely need to. But most of the work I do at the command line or in Emacs, because it's more convenient that way.
Uh-huh.
My work is with text.
Oh, okay.
And it's much more efficient to work in a completely textual mode.
All right. Well, Richard,
and switching between consoles is a very convenient way of running various programs at once.
And now, what distribution do you run?
I use Ututo.
Ututo, okay.
Ututo.
And that's
which is a distribution that I chose because it's entirely free software.
And that's out of somewhere in South America, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
However, there's a new distribution being developed, which is also entirely free, called GNUSense.
Now, how...
GNEWSENSE. It's spelled GNEWSENSE.
Okay. And is there been...
That's also entirely free software.
Now, has there been any significant development on the herd?
There is still work going on the herd, but it has substantial problems. It turns out the basic idea had some problems. So maybe eventually we'll solve them, but having another kernel is not the most important thing in the world.
Right.
And I don't treat the herd as the most important, as the highest priority project. The most important projects are to do things where, is to implement free software to do the jobs that there is no free software for.
Right. And that would be Ganache and Java at the moment.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and many others as well.
Right.
Those are projects where we've been doing it and to a large extent, done the job. But there are other areas where there is no free software. For instance, I don't think there's any free general-purpose CAD software, and that's important.
Is there a project that's working on that you're aware of?
I don't think there is one. Not that I know of, at least.
Huh. Alan, you'd know about that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, he worked
I couldn't hear that song. There was a dropout.
Oh, no, I was just asking.
Yeah, I haven't found anything that's free out there.
Yeah. All right. Richard, I want to thank you for coming on tonight and clearing up a lot of misconceptions that we may have had and some our audience may have had. It's been great speaking with you again, and I really appreciate you taking the time out.
Well, happy hacking.
Happy hacking to you,
always
too.
Always enlightening. Thank you.
Thanks a
Thank
lot.
You.
Bye. Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
What else has been going on this week? That was Richard Stallman. Great having him on. And I hope...
Mason Link was getting him agitated.
Yeah. But always interesting.
Link's still there. Did he drop off?
I think he dropped off, Link.
I heard
somebody drop off.
He dropped off again. Oh, let me ask you guys' opinion. I mean, of course, Richard Stallman, we all know he was a founder of the free software movement. And of course, he strongly believes in those viewpoints. And it was great to hear what he had to say. Now, on the opposite end, I guess he wouldn't say so much the opposite end, I don't think, as, we alluded to talking about Eric Raymond and coming out. Saying that, hey, we need to make some allowances if we want to see Linux and or GNU/Linux gain popularity on the desktop.
GNU plus Linux, Dan. Get it right, damn it. GNU plus Linux.
To gain market share and some influence in the industry, more influence particularly for the desktop users. What are you guys' opinions on that? Opening up to proprietary codecs and making it easier for people to install.
It's great, that you have, really good motives and wanting freedoms for people. That's fantastic. I guess it's just the way you get there is the big question,
Yeah, it's the same. It's nice to be able to say that, everything is free, but in the real world, we got to deal with, if you want to get Linux to everybody or to more people, you've got to be able to play your Flash.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to play
absolutely right.
CDs and, without having to go and fix it yourself, DVDs, things like that.
The other thing is money talks and bullshit walks, The only thing that the hardware manufacturers are going to understand is people spending their money for a particular piece of hardware to do a particular thing.
Yeah.
And if most people don't give a shit, then it's never going to happen. But if people, running, Linux... want to be done, then we got to vote with our pocketbooks and tell them, we're not going to pay for this. Yes, we are going to pay for this.
Yeah.
I'm back, by the way, for a minute or two anyway.
There he is, Mr. Headache. But do you think it's okay to sacrifice the ideals, a lot of the ideals that the GPL is based upon and, a lot of the core ideas of behind GNU/or plus Linux to be able to gain market share? Should we just toss all that that's gotten us this far to the side. For
me, first of all, I'm not going to call it GNU Linux because it's not GNU Linux. It's Linux.
That's listen, the name it's of the GIMP, freaking Mozilla, operating system. Firefox.
That's right. That's
Thunder,
the name of the
Thunderbird, Linux, GCC,
there's a lot
GNU.
Of stuff in there that's not free. There's a lot of stuff that's not GNU. And furthermore, nobody calls it GNU BSD, and they use a lot of the GNU utilities, too.
Yep,
that's
they sure do.
Bullshit. It's stupid semantic bullshit.
It is
I'm not doing that.
I'm not asking you to. I'm asking you to answer
the question.
Second
of all, I don't think that... No, well, to answer the question is, I don't think that there's any really good definition of the ideals in there. Because, you know, like Richard was saying, I had him switching his mind so fast about what is actually constituting the free software and what's good about it or what's bad about non-free software, I couldn't even keep up with him. And I think the same goes for a lot of the stuff in GPL. It depends on, you know, you really have to have a really good definition by I guess, the author as to what they want their stuff. And a lot of the GPL stuff is, you know, even though they get real legal with it, I think, some of it is worded in such a manner that you might be able to construe different meanings here or there. You know what I mean?
Right.
Depending upon what your ideal is for the day or something like that. Generally speaking, I think we can all get the gist of what's there.
Wait a minute.
So do you guys
wait, generally speaking, we can all get the gist of what's there for what? I mean, what do you mean? I lost what you were saying.
What the ideals are behind each movement, and that I think is a good idea for them, you know, for us to have multiple types of software, I guess.
Okay.
Multiple categorizations or...
So I guess, you know, I get more to the point. If we do, and it's not a matter if we do, because apparently they are working on it. And it's going to be a reality in the very near future. Do you really think that the possibility of what Eric envisions seems to be that, okay, we're going to gain market share by opening up to non-free software, particularly to codecs, bring more people in, hopefully, as we gain more desktop usage, we gain more market share, then we'll be able to convince the industry leaders of the, you know, multimedia companies to start releasing their products in an open format, maybe Aug, Theora, whatever. You really think that's a reality, or are they just going to turn around and say, hey, look, you've been doing it this way. Why should we bother to change?
I agree with that wholeheartedly up until one point where you said that we're going to convince them somehow to release their stuff in an open format. I don't think they're going to do that, but what I do think they're going to do is when Linux gains more of a market share, they will release their
I think they'll start releasing
Linux
stuff toward.
Right. They'll release it specifically for, like, they might release it for Windows and maybe Solaris, but they'll release it for Linux, too. Even though it might be in a closed, proprietary, you know, kind of format, they'll make one. Binaries available for Linux, which, you know, for me, does what I want it to do. I don't care, really, if a program is listed as proprietary because I cannot copy it and give it to my neighbor, as long as I can use it and it's free for me to get and free for them to get, I see it as having the same end. You know what I mean? It's a means to the same end result. I don't have to be able to necessarily go in and tweak the code if it works.
Okay. Pat or Alan, do you have any comment on that?
If it doesn't work.
No, I agree there. I don't really care whether I have to pay for it or not, actually. If it's a decent program and it works, I don't mind paying
exactly.
for it.
Exactly. I don't have a problem paying for software.
I would love it to be free, of course, you know, because I'm cheap at certain things and without other things. But, if it works and it's what I need, I don't have a problem paying for it myself.
All right, well, let's talk about paying for it, though. I mean, obviously, they produce these codecs here. It's going to be distributed as a pay model. Is this going to look like a possibility of death by a thousand cuts here? I mean, you can sway somebody from Windows or OS 10 and say, hey, look, we got all this functionality. But then if, you're paying $10 for a codec, say you throw an MP3, Windows Media Playback, QuickTime, and already, they're charging $10 a pop, plus DVD playback, maybe, you got $40 right there on top of
But you know system. What? That'll never happen.
I'm just saying. It's an outrageous example, but why don't you think it'll ever happen?
The reason I don't think it'll happen is because I don't think there's a business model to support that. What you see for a business model with the codecs and stuff like that is you will see programs that have all of those codecs licensed, like on the Mac, right? Like you get, let's say on Windows, you get Real Player or whatever. What's the
Windows
like
Media
Real Player Gold
Windows
or something Windows. Like that?
Yeah. What happens is you buy a media player kind of thing, okay? And that media player comes with the codecs to do, whatever it is you want to do with it. I don't see you having to buy the individual codec and buy a player. I see it being a bundled thing,
But then, okay.
I don't think you're going to buy individual codecs.
Well, no. They said that they're going to make a package downloadable off of, like, Linspire. You can buy from Linspire. It is installed onto your system. And any one of your media players, provided they are knowledgeable of that using those codecs, which... It almost sounds like the way it is now. If you get the Win32 codecs in for your distribution, most likely MPlayer, Totem, Zine, whatever is going to be able to use that. It sounds they're kind of perpetuating that same model. Yeah, you're going to be able to get the codecs that you'll drop it down, and your media player of choice will be able to use that codec then. The way that it is now.
So they're essentially selling the codecs as a package and just expecting you to have Linux running with some kind of media player.
Right, and most distributions come with some kind of media player. I mean, I don't know a distribution that doesn't, but what I'm saying is, it sounds like they're going to offer the codecs. Now, whether that's going to be a bundle of codecs, or, what I'm saying is, what if it turns out to be like individual codecs, maybe $5 for MP3 playback? I think Linspire is $10 for legal DVD playback. I mean,
I'm not sure. I've never looked up that.
Wouldn't know.
I think it's more
than that.
I don't know what it is, but that's what I say. It's a little concern there that all of a sudden now, if you start going down that route, convincing people to move over because you have all this capability, is it going to be a death by a thousand cuts?
They're just still nickel and dime you forever.
Right, that's what I mean. I mean, okay, here's $5 for the MP3, here's $20 for the DVD. Want Windows Media Playback support, okay, here's another $10. And all of a sudden
maybe that'd be good for some people. Because Linux is based on choice anyway, right?
No,
what if the only thing you want to do on your computer is play MP3 files? Why the hell would you want to pay, when you can pay $5 for just MP3 files, why do you want to pay $50 and get MP3 and WMA and, DVD playback and stuff that you're never going to use. So maybe that would
be a good
option.
Right.
Maybe
some people want all that crap.
For them. Yeah, maybe it's a good price point for them to offer it both ways. You can buy a package deal and get them all, or you can nickel and dime yourself to death on the ones that you do want.
Well, price point would
either
be
way,
the important part.
It really doesn't matter as long as it's available and legal, I think is a good thing to work toward.
Now, see, I would be interested to know. Now, of course, when they're talking about releasing these packages, you're looking at for the main what they consider main distributions, Ubuntu, Debian, Fedora, SUSE, and Mandriva. Now, those of us using Slackware, Arch, or any other kind of not considered main distributions, I'm wondering, if you get the license for that, if you would purchase that license, the codecs through Linspire, does that give you the right to install and use the codecs that your package's distribution mechanism might have? For instance, of course, you can enable the Malarat in Debian Marat in Debian or Ubuntu, or you can, the extras repository in Arch and get those Win32 codecs. Now, does having the license allow you to use the codecs in that manner from your distribution?
Depends on the license, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm wondering about that.
Because look at the Windows licensing agreement, and that changes every time. And at this point, it's like, you know, you bought the software, but you're not allowed to install it on any more than one computer. You know, it used to be you can install it on one computer at a time. Now it's you can install it once and.
Well, it's always going to be one computer. They're never going to allow you to do more than one.
No, they used to let you. It was transferable between computers. But
yes,
now it's
yes.
not anymore. Now they want you to put it on your one system, and you have an
opportunity when you get rid of the
reinstall
system.
It one time if you break it, and that's it.
Yeah.
So it depends on the license. With the codecs would be the same way. However, they licensed it. You can have the codec that works on your one computer, this one installation, or you can kind of, you know, you paid for the codec, you can use it on whatever the hell you want, just only one at a time, or, you know, you can use it forever on everything. It depends on how they rig the license. I'm sure that it's going to be more advantageous for them to say you can only install it one time on one computer. That way they keep making money. You know?
They keep making money, yeah.
Windows Vista, baby.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, that's a bad thing, but it's a good thing if they would at least come to the table long enough to say that you can buy the damn codec and have it be legal. I don't have a problem with playing MP3 files and stuff like that because I think, like Pat Volkerding said, that the patent infringement crap is not on playback, but it's on, you know, making the damn thing.
Well, if you're ripping your CDs and encoding them, you're infringing on the patents then.
Right. If you were doing that,
I think
that's
only...
Maybe somebody else is doing it.
That's only if you're sharing them with a million people,
though. I'm all for free use. Your own stuff is your own stuff, you know? I'm just playing devil's advocate, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Not with me, you're not, because I believe the same way you do. I think if I bought the damn thing in a store, I'd be able to do whatever the hell I want with it.
Absolutely. You should
agree there.
You want to wipe your ass with it? You wipe your ass with it. It might hurt,
exactly.
But...
Burn it, throw it out the window, give it away. You know,
exactly.
Whatever.
Anything you want with it. Coasters.
Current fair use laws still say that you can give your, you know, you can make copies for immediate family and even close friends, as far as I'm...
Give that time.
Anyway. I'm sure they're working to change it, but that's current fair use, you know?
Yeah, of course they're trying to change
where
it.
Where they start... Yeah, well, where they
It'll
start...
It'll be in the next defense
when, you know,
bill.
When somebody...
Yeah,
pork. Somebody sticks the stuff on the internet for 90 million people to download. But, I still think it's good that somebody is pursuing an avenue somewhere that you can, you know, if you're so inclined, you can pay for the codecs. If it makes you feel better, you know what I mean. The problem
with
now
is
you can't do that,
right?
You know,
exactly.
You know, even if you're whether or not your conscience prohibits you from doing so, you cannot buy it now. And some people want to, and I think it ought to be available. You know, you ought to be able to, you know, if your conscience really bothers you about it, you ought to be able to really say, you know. Here's my receipt. You know, last week I bought this codec so that I could legally watch DVDs on my Linux system. If you wanted to,
exactly.
You know what? I don't see what the big deal is with the companies releasing that kind of stuff because they're only going to make money off it. Because the people who want to watch DVDs on their Linux box without paying for the codec are going to do it. You know, they're going to do it anyway. But now you're forcing the people who want to pay you money not to be able to pay you money.
Right. And I get, you know, that's a real important point right there. I mean, the thing is, you know, you and I, we can, just about anybody that listens to the show, practically, if they want to go out and play DVDs or watch Windows Media or use, you know, or QuickTime videos or whatever, they're going to be able to go do that. And they're going to do it, you know, illegally so much, you know, but given the but there's no other option. But given the option to
say,
we could do it illegally or we could pay for it, you know, then it becomes, you know, it's up to us to decide whether, yeah, we're going to do it the right way,
especially if it's
or the legal way, or
especially if it's,
continue doing it
if
illegally.
It's a trivial amount of money. You know, especially if it's a trivial amount of money. If I could support the legal developers of the software by giving them a nominal amount of money, like $20, and then have the rights to play that codec, you know, from here until heaven, I would do it. Because I think that's a fair deal. You know what I mean?
Right.
They want to make some money off it, give me an avenue to give them a penance, and I'll do it. But right now, the way I have to look, I'm forced to look at it because there are no other alternatives, is that if I want to play a codec that I don't have, the only way I can think about it is, hey, you know, I still have a legal copy of Windows, whatever the hell it is, in a box under my bed rotting somewhere. I paid for that, and that has the codec, so I must be able to use it on Linux. Whether or not that's the truth, that's the only way to rationalize it, because you can't get it any other way.
Right.
So, I mean, other than to use Windows or something like that, and, you know, there's only so far that a man can go.
Well, pretty soon you'll have five roads you can go down to use in Windows there.
Right.
But you can only use two of them on a virtual machine, so.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So then you have to pay for more.
You know, and speaking of that, of course, with Vista coming out and the 5th, you know, I this past week I have listened to a lot of the different TWiT broadcasts, This Week in Law, and whatever, the Windows one I even listened to. And what I find really interesting is when you listen to all these different ones, is it seems that Leo seems to like bounce back and forth in all these different ones. And, you know, in one he's like, oh, you know, Linux, that's the greatest thing, everybody should be switching that. And the other ones he's like, you know, Windows is the way to go. It's really good. Windows is what I like to see. Windows is pretty good.
You're going to be able to make his money, Dan.
I know. It's interesting to see him bounce back and forth. But in most of them, he always does seem to come back, though, to saying, well, you know, I think Windows is going to, Microsoft's going to screw it all up, and that, you know, if Linux can only get its act together enough or a little more, you know, that's going to definitely be the way to go. But, of course, Apple does no evil, I guess.
Right.
But no, I
of course
did
not, because they
we all worship
everything.
Steve.
Yes. So I did go through a lot of his. You know, I don't mind the TWiT podcast network or whatever the hell it is now. I don't like their intro anymore. Podcasts you love from people you trust. You know, I don't like that because it makes it sound like, you know, the implication
Netcast.
Is yes, Netcast.
It makes get it right, Dan. Netcast.
Yes, the implication seems to be like, okay, if you're not listening to this, well, why you don't trust anybody else? Well, we can't trust anybody else. I don't know. Any other news do you guys have?
Yeah,
no, but
Ubuntu came out, man.
I sure wish that we had Eric Raymond on the same call with Richard. We got to set that up sometime. That would have been
that would be fun.
Sit back and watch the fight.
And we'll throw a link in for little dabs to get the blood pressure going.
You know what? I wasn't trying to pick on the guy. I'm just trying to get a word in edgewise, you know? He's a hard guy to talk to.
Yeah. Any of you guys do upgrades for Ubuntu or no?
I still haven't, no. I haven't done anything yet.
I don't have, I'm not, my wife runs Ubuntu, I don't, so I haven't upgraded it yet.
I got Kubuntu running on my AMD 64 system, and it was pretty flawless, man. No problems whatsoever.
No, but you didn't do the Ubuntu way to upgrade, right? You did the apt-get way.
Yeah, I did it the way I learned it, freaking, you know, 8 years ago, whatever. You know, you change the sources
and
source bus.
Use an apt-get, right? Change the app sources,
yeah.
And then you do apt-get.
Yep, do apt-get update and apt-get this upgrade and work fine.
Right, not that other one, the GK. Sudo something.
Oh, the system updater?
The way that they
say
to do it. Yeah.
No, I didn't bother with that.
Because I hear a lot of people that doing it that way are having a lot of problems updating.
It sounds like a lot of people have problems, man.
Your platform. Give maybe them maybe the AMD 64.
Yeah, work fine, man. I know they say that Kubuntu and Ubuntu are the same thing, but I don't buy it. There's differences.
I don't know. I'm going to wait a couple weeks on this one.
I already got some updates today. There's a whole bunch of updates that popped up on my notifier.
I'm still running at work. I'm still running the last release, Dapper, which runs just fine. And
you're still running Warty.
They're so god awful slow. No, it's Dapper, but the internet connection there runs so slow that, like, I would have to come in at 2:00 in the morning to start an upgrade to Edgy, you know. Or the other alternative is I just install from, you know, I download it and install from a disk, which is probably the only real good way to do it. But at home,
I think you can do that with the upgrade as well. You can. I think you can get the alternate install. And then tell the upgrader to use that disk. That's supposed to work real well.
One good thing that I noticed when I installed Kubuntu originally on my AMD 64 system when it was running 2.6.15 kernel, I had problems with the open source drivers for the audio card and the network card that would get locks and stuff and drops after a certain amount of time. With this release, man, I tried just, you know, I checked out the open source drivers, and they work like a champ, so I didn't need to add that extra NVIDIA closed driver for the Enforce 2 chipset. So the only thing closed that I'm running...
drivers.
Yeah, they work great, no problem. So the only thing I'm running closed is the 3D video driver, the NVIDIA driver. That's it.
I don't know. Well, I'll tell you what, it's really easy to update my workstation at home, though. All I do is, like, a Pac-Man... dash capital S Y U and it fixes it right up.
Pac-Man's nice. Arch is a nice distro, man. I'm gonna throw it back on my spare box just to see what it's like. I haven't played with it in a while, but I know
forget.
The install is a bitch.
What, Arch? Nah. Arch is beautiful.
Slack 11?
Slack 11 is beautiful too. I installed, actually, yeah, I did install Slack 11. I did an install in a VMware player. Installed.
What do
you think?
well, you know, what can you say? I mean, the install really hasn't changed, and it works. It works spectacularly. I don't have any problems with it. It comes up. It runs pretty snappy. You got the KDE. You got the XFCE by default. It runs fast. It's Slackware. It's stable. No problems. I mean, what more can you say?
It's Slack.
Is it 2.6 or 2.4 kernel?
Did I do what? 2.6?
So we got any wrapper thing?
I think I just did the 2.4 because I was just trying it out. I actually did it last week, and I really didn't say much about it on the show. I guess we could do some wrapper shout-outs. One thing I did want to say, though, is if you go over to LXer today, crap. What's his name? What's the guy that took over LXer now? The main editor guy, what's his name?
DC Paris?
Yeah, DC Paris. I thought he had a really good editorial today on the
yes, it was good.
GPL version 3, some of the issues surrounding it. Part 1 today, GPL version 3 debate, viewing the landscape, DC Paris. I think really good editorial. I can't wait for part 2 tomorrow. Hopefully there'll be more parts. He does a fantastic job. Also, something to look out for, Linux Games has a Linux Games podcast. I listened to the first two episodes. Some top-notch stuff, definitely. If you're at all interested in Linux Games, go check that out. And maybe there'll be another logger soon.
Hopefully.
I hope so. I've just been so damn busy. I just haven't had enough time to devote to it. I barely had time to get out my twat last week.
You can't ignore the twat, man.
No, I'm not saying I'm trying to, but I noticed somebody dropped off of it.
Yeah, I got things to deal with, you know, real life issues. So
I understand.
Other things more important.
No, I understand. I understand. I hope that someday soon you'll come back.
I'll go
that's
back
what
there.
He says to your face, but behind your back, he calls you a bastard.
Yeah, I called Link up yesterday. The moment I got that email, I said, "The son of a bitch."
Yeah.
Freaking, I knew it.
Rad bastard.
That's it.
How about some Frapper Map shout-outs?
How about you do that?
Shout-out, man.
It hurts my head.
We got Ryan Wolf from Covington, Virginia. Okay, we've got Woody from Ipswich, England. We've got Dan Twomley from Heartland, Michigan. Anthony from the Dominican Republic. We got Monster B from Hobart, Indiana. Paul Harrison from Birmingham, England. David Mooney from Sydney, Australia. IP Freely from Springfield, Illinois. Carl Stevenson from Rochester, Minnesota. Richard Bronowski from Douglasville, Georgia, and Devin from Spanish Fork, Utah.
Cool.
How many people on there now?
8,000, man.
832.
They're getting there. Yeah. Crap, you were just reading that off, and I had something I wanted to say.
Sorry.
No, it's not your fault. Damn it, what were we talking about just before that?
Twat.
What was I looking at? I don't know, damn it. Oh. It's the forums. I know we mentioned last week
that
we did implement admin approval. So far, I think it's going fairly well. We do have 3 admins now. And so if you sign up legitimately to our forum, if you're not already a member, you should get approved hopefully within an hour after you sign up. I think I need to send you guys a little bit of instructions. Are you getting emails at all when somebody signs up?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you're getting those. Good. So
for fixing mine, Dan, the other day.
Hey, no problem. That way, you know, we're catching about 5 or 6, at least 5 or 6 spam sign-ups a day. So, you know, it's a good thing. And remember, if you're going to sign up on our forum, please put something in there that indicates that you are not a spammer.
Spam bot.
Yeah, spam bot. Stay away from listing yourself as a medication, Viagra.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, or Cialis.
Stock market.
We accept fembots, though, but not spam bots.
You know, somebody signed up today and said, "Hey, Link, I'm a real human." So, you know, that's fine. You know, whatever you want to put in there, just something. Because if you leave it all blank, it's tough for me or any one of us to approve you.
Yeah.
So, you know, since we've implemented that, there hasn't been any spam that I've noticed at all come through.
No, it's been good. Life is good.
Mention Meat Spin and Dan will approve you.
Yeah, that's it.
Manboobs.com.
Uh-huh. And then anything else you guys have to say?
I was going to talk about Fedora Core 6, but we can leave that for next time.
Fedora Core 16.
Yes.
All right. Guess that's it, unless you have something, Link.
That's it, man.
That's it?
Play us out.
I'll play us out.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thank you for listening. Next week,
episode 165.
Oh, wait, I know. 2 things. Who's the guest next week?
I don't know. I don't have a calendar in front of me.
All right, I'll go check out that. I'd like to dedicate episode 165 to tab number 85 on Dave Yates' Firefox browser. Actually, what I think what he should do is every week we put out a new episode, he should add another tab to his browser.
Another tab, yeah.
Yes.
Our path.
How many tabs till Firefox blows up?
Yes, Link's telling us the guest, Eric Trone.
Yes, Eric Trone, yes.
What's
RPath? From RPath?
What's RPath?
RPath was started by a bunch of ex Red Hat employees.
Oh, okay.
They build the server appliances, you know, where you can build your own software appliance, specialized.
Okay, cool.
Are they going to send us one to check out before we interview them?
They were at the Ohio Linux Fest, and I got a disk, so they were sitting right across from us.
Oh, okay.
So these are the guys that built like games and stuff like that into a whole live CD distribution.
Not so much games. They do like different things, like, you know, like a kiosk kind of deal, or you know, like very specialized things. You could build your own custom, like, distro geared towards your own install that you need, you know, a particular piece of hardware for. We'll talk to them next week. We'll get all the details.
Or something like that?
I don't think so. I think this is... I don't think that's closed. I think it's all open.
Okay. Works for me.
Should be good.
All right. All right, I'm going to play us out of here.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. Over. God damn it.
Track number 5 from the album Jaxploitation by Jackalopes from Magnatune.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up. Over.
Over. Freaking great.
It's over.
That's it. Pat's over.
It's over.
It's over.
Pat's over.
Pat's over at Alan's house.
We're getting cozy, baby.
Yeah, beer cozy.
What was this, 165, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Show 165.
It's exciting.
I just have to split.
I thought he was
going to
hang up for a second.
Yeah, I really did. I missed the beginning of the question there, waiting. But hell.
Yeah,
well,
you...
he missed the beginning of the question because he was off on a fucking tangent before he even heard what I was asking.
There was a post that just came in to the chat about, it's on the register. They have a picture of the Windows release date upgrade voucher. It says release date 30th of January. 20,007. This is hilarious. It says Vista delayed by 18,000 years. That is the article. And they even have a picture of the website that it came in off of. Oh, that's beautiful. Delayed 18,000 years.
Dan, we got to get together probably this weekend, and we can try to hash out to getting the other line running there.
Yeah, you know that.
Get the FX stuff working.
Yeah, we could do that.
I have a gut feeling it may take more than 20 minutes before the show.
Yeah, that was a...
Actually, make note of where all the settings are right now.
I'm not going to move them.
Because it sounded really good. Well, I know, but just in case, you know, get fingers that move them around or whatever, but...
You know what the problem fingers. That we had tonight, and I don't know, and this, I think it was with his connection, because he would go from like,
He was going louder and softer.
Yeah, he was going from
I think he was on like a headset or something.
Yeah, something would happen where he would go drop down to around 12 decibels, and then he'd be up by like 0 decibels. I mean, it was negative 12 or 0. I mean, he was just, I don't know. It wasn't. I don't think it was his fault. I think it was just his connection, and it was hard to keep adjusting for that. And then Link popped on, and Link was in the mid range there.
He just wanted to fight with everyone.
That's it.
Yeah, that's what it was.
How you feeling today, there, sweetie pie?
On a side note, Link, there's a cigar thing up Friday night up at Cigars International.
Oh yeah, you got.
I'll send you the. I'll send you the mail that I got.
Are you going to go?
I'm thinking of it, yeah. I don't think I have anything to do Friday. It's like from 2 to 8, but we'll catch the end.
Cool. Well, if you go, you let me know. I'll go with you.
All right.
Aww.
No problem, man.
Cigar, you can come, too.
That'll be a long drive. On a Friday night?
Well, you get started early.
I'd have to leave at like noon.
Well, it's only 7 hours, right?
6. Well, that all depends on how the tunnel traffic is over here. Like, when we came up this past weekend, which went way too fast, and by the time we got up, it seemed like we just had to leave right after that. There was an accident in the tunnel, and so we had to backtrack. So we backtracked. We had to go over to another tunnel, go through another tunnel, and we got off. And then out there was another road that we tried to get on. There was an accident on that one, too, and it was closed, so we had to go back again. It was such a pain in the butt. We had to drive all the way around an hour out of our way just to get to the Chesapeake Bay Bridge tunnel. And then it was no traffic the rest of the way. And that's the way it goes.
Guys, read that email. Some guy sent an email saying, it sounds atrocious. You should try Levelizer and Gizmo.
Yeah, I have
I've run Levelizer.
Huh?
I've run Levelizer on our stuff up here. It actually comes out pretty good with that, but unfortunately it only works on Macs and Windows, yeah.
Well, I think
there's a bunch of people who keep emailing him about that.
According to the... let's see if I still have the link to the website for it. Your audio problems, Gigavox Levelator. Is that what he's talking about? Linux is not supported at this time. I would assume that would mean that they are working on one.
That's what, if you look in there's a link on that page to the forums, and it seems like they are. It's just not on their highest priority because I guess eventually they'll probably sell something like this. So they want to see how many people actually want to use it first.
Yeah. I wonder if it'll work under Wine.
But it actually sounds pretty good. I know. You need to make sure you have all the Java stuff running and stuff. But I guess if you have all that running, you probably would.
Under Wine,
I've used it on what I record up here. And I'll post it up tomorrow. Because I convert this to Wave, and then I run it through Levelator, and then I convert it to OGG in the morning.
How well does it
work? Yeah, I'll put a link on it.
How well
does
it work?
Last week's show came out pretty good.
I mean, is there a real noticeable difference?
It came out pretty good. It will, if you're really low, it brings everybody up to the same exact volume. Last week should be in Metzler A. It's 163.output.og, I think it is. If you look at my directory over in Dan on the Linux link.
So what you're saying, does it bring the low people up, or does it bring everybody down? And then try to adjust it.
No,
up.
It gives everybody like the same volume. So if you have people who are really loud, it brings them down. If you have people who are really low, it'll bring them up. Yeah, except that it's active. Like, you know, you can tell, like, you know, what last week when, you know, Pat was really low and then you would come in and talk on it, you hear that ramping as you're going down to get, you know, to get to a normal volume. It doesn't work too bad. I really like the way it sounds. If you have a really, really bad connection, like, you know, it brings up a lot of the noise that was in Pat's, you know, connection last week. But overall, I mean, it made it very listenable.
Right.
Yeah, I think it should still be over in my Metzler A over on the server. I think it's, like I said, I think it's 163.output.og, I think it is. I think that's what the name of it is. But you can take a look over there.
I'm heading out.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
I'll be back. Dun, dun.
All right. I guess that's it. I'm going to shut down the recording. Yeah. All right. I'll talk to you guys next week.
All right. See you, Dan.
Hey, I hope you feel better there, sweetie pie.
Okay. I don't talk a whole lot anyway, so it's okay.
Okay. When you speak loud right now, I can hear you. Maybe you're speaking louder, or maybe it just got better.
I turned the volume up a little bit. I think we'll be all right now.
How about me? Do I sound loud enough?
Yeah, everyone's loud enough now.
Okay, that's good.
Dan, just run with it like we normally do, and we'll work on this other input thing during the week.
No problem.
I think that works, because right now everybody can hear everybody. And
that's good.
That's the best we've had in a while, so. Play us in, Dan. Might as well start the show.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing that in just a second. Let me bring the system up.
Oh, you can hear Dan's kids watching TV in the background.
Yeah, they're going to bed in a few minutes.
I think they better stop it now.
In a little while, we'll hear Dan beating his kids. It's a joke. So where does Dan have his setup? He's got it like in the middle of the living room? That's what it sounds like.
I don't know.
All right. Hopefully everybody's going to be able
to
hear
this.
And
you
got to
bring up the stream, Tim.
Oh, yeah, the stream.
You have to bring up the stream, Dan. I know. People are complaining about that one, Dan.
Yeah, no stream.
No.
We apologize for the delay.
All right, I'm bringing up the stream right now. And as soon as I bring up the streams, we will be live. Everybody will be happy. Okay, I have the stream. First stream is up.
And then the mirrors kick in, right?
Yep, the mirror should be kicking in. Ben Rev is up. Everybody's up.
Yep, they can hear us. Okay.
Everybody can hear us? So what I'm going to do...
Yeah, the IRC...
What?
On the IRC, they're saying that everything's good.
And here comes the audio opening. All right, here we go. We should be good to go. I'm going to give us a countdown. We're going to play the audio, and then we're going to get right into it. Sorry for the little bit of a delay there. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The Linux Link Tech Show is proudly sponsored by Open Country, providers of OCM, award-winning systems management software for the Linux enterprise, and exclusive sponsors of the Webmin Project.